Dave Wunstead hanging out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to have Coach Wunstead here in studio. And we're talking about the Bears, and they are in London on Sunday morning in Chicago, 8:30. Obviously, it's normal time in London, 6 hours later than that. But Dave, I'm curious. So I had the pleasure of covering you when you were here in Chicago, and I recall many different times when you might have a Monday night game, or you would have I don't remember if there were Thursday night games at that point, but definitely Monday nights. You would always be conscious and aware of who did well on Monday nights, what their formula was, how they prepared because of the different time period. Mm-hmm. A short week, you always did research on it, and you always kind of adapted things. How would you handle a trip to London? And the Bears have gone in now on a Monday night, and they arrived this morning. And they play on Sunday. The Jaguars, they have two games in London, so they're leaving on Thursday. They will get there on Friday. Now, that might change depending on the storm situation, as we talked about in Florida. But the plan now is for them to get there, to leave Thursday night, significantly later in the week than the Bears have left. But they'll be there for another week, so I suppose they would take that into account, because they've got two games in London. I'm just wondering, what's the best way to do an international trip? You went to Ireland, as I recall, back in the day.
We did, and I've gone to Tokyo with the Cowboys.
Right.
So I've had, but they were preseason games, so it's completely different as far as your approach. I can tell you this, the Thursday night thing, to answer your question, going back to the University of Pittsburgh days, we used to play West Virginia every Thursday, and then at the Cowboys we played Thanksgiving every week. So we had a very good schedule in what we wanted to do to win on a Thursday night following a Sunday game. Now, as far as this, all I can relate to, I've always put value on, when I was the Dolphins, we would play the Seattle Seahawks. We'd play the Oakland Raiders. I mean, that's 6-7 hours. That's about as far as you can fly in this country from Miami to Seattle. We know that. And we would leave Saturday morning. And I always put value on preparation. And by that, I mean I wanted to give our players, in my mind, and maybe it's different over there in London. I mean, Flus probably went through all this, with all the people. But I never wanted to leave anything for chance as far as meeting rooms. So we're going to meet in a hotel? Is that what you're telling me? And all of a sudden, the audiovisual guy just doesn't work. And, I don't know. Crazy things can happen and upset, a distraction for a meeting. How about injuries? Guys, everybody's banged up. We got $1 million worth of medical equipment in our training room. So we're going to go over there and take a hot pack with us and a bag of ice for four days. That used to make me nervous. And just the field conditions. I'm sure they got nice fields. But here, we control it. Rains, we go inside. Cold, we can control the conditions, the temperature. So,
Interesting.
I always was a big pet peeve on preparation lean. And I told our players, I said, guys, we're going to go out there. We're going to land. You're going to get up. And it's going to be 4 o'clock in the morning when you're waking up. Okay, let's go. Let's get a cup of coffee and let's go play this damn game and win it. And we never had a problem. I just put more emphasis on the preparation stuff. Now, I will say this about Flus. He knows what he's doing, and there's been games over there. So they probably have all this stuff covered a lot better than just going.
You're kind of slaves to protocol. You want to do the things the way you've always done them week to week to keep it standardized. How big of a loss do you think it is if Jaquan Brisker doesn't play? And how concerned should the Bears be about a player who is entering concussion protocol for the third straight season?
Yeah, it's that would be a little bit of a concern, not just to the Bears, but to the individual. But the big thing is with the NFL and with any sport. My grandson's going through it now. Three concussions in one calendar year, that raises a major red flag. And that's what Tua's dealing with a little bit right now at Miami.
Yes.
So it's not what happened in this game, But when they look at his history, how often has it happened? Because when you get one, it's a lot easier to get the second one and the third one. That's proven. So is it a loss to the team? Sure it is. I think what he brings, besides his playing ability, if you ask me right now, who are the three big emotional leaders on this defense, he's definitely one of them. You know, I mean, he just because he plays aggressive and he's tough and he's right on the edge. I would call him a edge player as far as how aggressive he is. So
his passer rating against, believe it or not, is also among the highest.
Oh, really?
Oh, he's been really good in that area.
Who's going to take his place, guys? Did they announce?
Jonathan Owens would be the likely candidate, but it may have moved things around.
Yeah, they have who's the other kid that plays? They got another guy.
Elijah Hicks?
Okay. Yeah, Elijah Hicks.
Yeah, Hicks could be that. Depending on what they do with Kevin Byard, maybe it'd be situational.
Yeah.
Right. But they do have some options that they trust and guys with experience.
Okay. Yeah, so and you know what they miss him most, in my mind, is the run game. Right, because the minute that someone makes a couple first downs and they're running the ball, what does Flus do? Here comes either three deep, David, with Brisker in the box as a run defender, or if they're going to bring your pressure, he's one of the first guys. If I'm a quarterback, I got to know where Brisker is.
Big sack the other day.
Big sack the other day. Huge sack.
The segment that Dave wants is sponsored by ChicagoRoofingContractors.org, providing all-weather protection for your business. Dave, what did you like about the way Shane Waldron called Sunday's game?
You know what? I just really we're all looking at the whole game stats, which you have to. But I focused in on that first half because it was over at halftime. I mean, Carolina, you know, they had had enough. They were ready to get on the plane and go back home. But when I look at the first half of this football game, I saw third down. I saw our defense hold them. They didn't convert a third down, so we started fast there. And on offense, we were number one. We were averaged 4 yards a run, okay? We didn't average that at the end of the game, but we did average that at halftime, which was big improvement from what we were doing, 3 yards or whatever. We had four pass plays over 15 yards, so we legitimately threw the ball down the field some. Yep. You know, we averaged 9.9 yards a reception for the game, which was as excellent. He had plays that were well-designed plays. I mean, the crossing route for a touchdown, you know, it was a pick play. I mean, it was a pick play 15 yards down the road that Keenan Allen did a fabulous job of running his corner into DJ's corner, and it was a great job. And on that same play, Cole Kmet stayed in and blocked the blitzing linebacker, and so did Swift. So, great job. And then the touchdown, I love the touchdown to DJ Moore. If you go back and look at that, I talked about this on NBC on my show afterwards. They lined up into the boundary, into the short side of the field, okay? Generally, you want to put all your receivers and stuff and run to the wide side, right? Okay. They put everybody into the short side of the field, three receivers, and then they took DJ Moore and they put him to the wide side of the field, and they put him about 2 or 3 yards outside the numbers. So he was kind of between the sideline and the numbers. He was about as far away as you can get without being on the out of bounds. And Caleb drops back, and what does he do? He's looking to where all the receivers are. That's natural. What does their free safety do?
He goes over there.
So now Caleb's got what he wants. Yep. And it's he's
a one-on-one match.
Thank you.
DJ Moore is inside bracketing the guy.
A lot of room, and Caleb makes a great throw.
Great throw.
You know, so well-designed plays. Shane Waldron gets credit for that, and give Caleb. I mean, no interceptions, no turnovers by our quarterback.
Nearly an interception on the first pass in the game.
Darn wind,
coach. That's like one of my assistants, Molly. What you just did was like one of my assistants coming up and saying, "Coach, they're holding us." And I say, "I don't see any flags on the ground." Don't tell me they're holding us, Molly. Okay?
So the ball was not picked. Shut your pile. Yeah.
I also think, Dave, when you look at, they called 30 pass plays. And the week before they called more runs than passes, I believe, or at least it was more balanced. Somebody must have gotten to Shane Waldron after the Colts debacle. 52 passes because the last 2 weeks have been more of a responsible game plan.
Absolutely.
With a rookie quarterback.
Yes. Hey, guess what? I got the halftime stats here, as I said. How about this for halftime? 24 runs and 15 passes.
It's like you were calling plays.
Right? Is that beautiful?
and
a lot of times when they ran up in there, and you know how I feel about DeAndre Swift. I love him as a player in that, but I just think that inside runner, I'm not sold on it. Okay, anyway. But they, you know what they did? If he ran up in there for two or three, they came back and ran again. They didn't give up on it. And that's, to me, an improvement they had.
To me, the moment of the game was the pass play you described where they score a touchdown right before the half.
Mm.
So they come out, they get a lead. You know, they're trailing. They come back, they take the lead. Then you get another touchdown, and that seemed to really turn the game, right?
100%.
That changed everything, and it made their lives so much easier.
Go back to 2 weeks ago. We get down there right before the half, and we run a speed option and lose yards.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Right.
So just think of the mindset of the team, the coaches, the fans, everybody. Comparing the two games, it's
you're right.
So it was
like that identity they've established with this new kind of getting the power game going by having the center blocking on the goal line and short yardage. Do you think that's too gimmicky? Are you surprised at all, Dave,
that I don't think
Terry Blossom game is available but not used?
Yeah, and the only reason that they're not using him, I promise you, because he's a better blocker, there's no question he wouldn't be on the team, is because of the depth and the concern at the offensive line. You know, you always got guys there limping around for some reason. You know, and Jenkins gets hurt, right? And Nate Davis, who knows? And we got a lot of guys, probably more than we realize, that are right on the edge of coming off injuries or fighting through them.
Right.
And
Darnell Wright has been hurt earlier in the year. You're so right.
So Flus is sitting there saying, hey, guys, we can't get shorthanded on the offensive line. Get one of these guys ready at fullback. It's tough on them, though. Let me just say this. If you're running an ISO play straight ahead downhill, And I use the expression, I use Jim Flanagan all the time, but Jim Flanagan was a defensive lineman who was a heck of an athlete that ran 4.7, 4.8. So, because if you want to do anything outside the tackles, now you're going to have your offensive lineman hit and block a moving target. You know, you're on the edge, and the now here comes, or it's a sweep. Anything that's not between the tackles, you got to have a darn good athlete, and that's where your fullbacks, that's where I'd use Cole Kmet. You know, put Mercedes on the line and use Kmet as the fullback. That's where you get caught up. I think you're really limited on what you can do with an offensive lineman as a fullback. Want to run the ISO between the tackles? Go ahead, because that guy's going to be sitting in the hole. You want to run anything on the edge, stretch play, toss play, whatever, it's tough on them. It's real tough.
Dave, we talk about player development in every sport that we cover and talk about. When you look at the Bears and Jervon Dexter, what has he done specifically, or what have they done to help him develop into the kind of player who now is, five games in, one of the best, most disruptive defensive tackles in the NFL based on numbers? And you watch the tape, and he is much more visible and noticeable than he was a year ago.
It's all about Flus's scheme and him and Eric Washington, the defense coordinator, what they want to do. If you go back, was he a rookie last year? In the beginning of last year, I was up there and I was sitting talking to Flus, and I said, what is the biggest deal with Dexter? And he said he's having a learning process in our scheme, which is exactly what we did at Dallas. And I told you, it's a combination of what we did at Dallas, what Tony Dungy did at Tampa Bay. By that, I mean you want to be able to get pressure and make a lot of plays with your defensive linemen. We're not just taking up blocks. Maybe that'll describe it better. So we're lining guys up on the shoulder, inside shoulder, outside shoulder, and on the snap of the ball, get your butt going upfield. Okay, get going. Be aggressive. All right. Now, with that being said, he was coming out of a scheme where he wanted to attack the lineman with his hands, and he was kind of hanging on the offensive lineman.
Right,
and Flus was saying, we got to get him to understand, because what happens? If you're playing on the edge and you're coming off the ball and you're getting penetration up the field, you're going to be a better pass rusher because you're moving that direction. And you're going to make more negative plays because you're moving that direction.
Right.
Your linebackers might not make as many plays, but your defensive linemen will. And in this scheme, it's the front four guys are key.
I'm curious.
So he's making more plays because he understands the scheme better and he's playing more aggressive.
He also, you got to give him credit for reshaping his body.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Well, that's why we can play with Chris Zorichs and Jimmy Flanagan. I mean, you know, Russell Maryland. I mean,
Russell Maryland is a great.
Aaron Donald. I mean, Aaron Donald. These guys are 265, 270, but they're quick and they get on the edge and they can make plays.
How do you feel they're using their rotation with that? Because it's interesting to me that they have on occasion used Billings as a kind of three technique, and he's been fantastic in everything he's done. But he's more their, if you just look body shape, he's more the kind of
nose guard.
Yes,
You're right. No, we would always and they can you slide the front so the offense could dictate. You'd like to have your little better athlete, a la the Warren Sapps of the world, playing as that three technique. But if they can walk the tight end or they can slide the front, and now you go from a three technique, unless you're going to flip everybody, which we don't like doing, now you just slide. And so you got to have guys that can play both is my point. But you're right. So when Billings gets caught there, it's because of a formation or it's because of what they're trying to do from an offensive standpoint.
Quickly, Dave, what do you see when you see Trevor Lawrence and what happens Sunday?
Wow. You know what? This game, I don't know enough about Jacksonville. I can't believe, I guess, the numbers. If you just told me Jacksonville, I said, wow, this is something with Etienne at running back. He's a blazer, and they've got two or three good receivers, and they got, Trevor Lawrence. I mean, these guys, I picked them to win their division. I picked Jacksonville in the beginning of the year to win that division, and I've been disappointed. They're not playing good. I don't know why, how, or what, but the Bears, in my mind, got the momentum for sure. They got the momentum. They got the confidence right now. And, the real key, and I'll shut up after this, the real key for the Bears, in my mind, you can be a good team and win, go out and play good 1 week and dominate somebody like the Bears did with Carolina, and you're a good team. Great teams that I've been associated with, the championship teams that I've on college and NFL, they do it week after week. They are consistent with their attitude, with their performance, and obviously they get the results they want. So to me, the Bears got to put a couple performances together. I mean, I wouldn't call the Rams by any means a dominant. We could have lost that game. We won. I'm glad, I had the Bears big time, but anyway, that's another story. But I was happy. I mean, that was
so. The Bears are favored by 2.5, and the total is, I believe, 44.5.
Wow,
you staying off that one?
I am. I don't. And it's overseas. You don't know over there, guys. The food, guys. Someone gets sick. The practice. I mean, a lot of variables for both teams. For both teams when you go overseas. So I don't – I'm staying off of it. I mean, I think the Bears will win, but as of now, I'm staying off of it.
That's interesting. All right, Coach.
Yeah, a little more modest.
I'm just being honest with you.
I appreciate that.
I haven't lost this year with all my picks.
You're undefeated.
Yeah. Well, if you don't make any, it's a good way to win.
No, I mean, last week I had Rutgers in the points. I was big. My big one last week? I was all over Washington. Over
really?
Michigan.
That's pretty good call.
Washington's got a nice team, guys.
You and Pitt undefeated.
I'm on Pitt every week. Thank you.
How did you feel about Army?
I didn't see what
Army won.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Mully mentioned the Bulldog special. I believe they won by 42.
Oh.
Just saying.
How many points? What were you giving up?
I think it wasn't a lot.
30? No?
No, okay. No. It was, they cut.
The college game of the week, guys, is Ohio State goes to Oregon. In the preseason, they were the two preseason picks to battle it out for the Big Ten championship, right? So
2-3.
Yep. So they're going to deflate that giant duck.
Is that what they are?
It was boat? In the Indian River.
I think it's number 2 versus number 3.
Is it?
Yeah. It's a great matchup.
All right. Thanks so much, Dave. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Yeah, I would know. I talk to these guys every day. I see them every day. And no, I have not lost the locker room. I think these guys have done everything I've asked. They continue to play and practice hard and battle. And it's a good group. It's a good group. The right leaders in there. And they know what we need to do. And they're not making excuses for it. And I'm not going to make excuses. And we just got to go do it.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is Doug Peterson. And that was him responding to a report by Jordan Schultz with FS1 that he had lost the locker room. And that was before...
That was last week.
Before they won against Indy and got their first victory of the season.
They came back. 137-34.
That's right.
I think it's good for the Bears that the Jaguars won that game, so they're not as desperate this week to win a game. I also think if you have a team that's prone to having mental lapses or maybe not being plugged in and all together, they're more likely to fall apart if they fall behind. So they've got their victory. They aren't winless. So now the Jaguars go to London. They're the Bears' opponent. Doug Peterson, can you remember a coach who has had – a tougher time since winning a championship than Doug Peterson? Fired in Philadelphia, on the hottest seat in the NFL right now in Jacksonville.
I have always thought of Doug Peterson as a pretty good coach.
Yes, me too.
And to see, not only did he win a Super Bowl, he did so with a backup quarterback. Always one of the hardest positions to ever fill. And, is it his fault that Wentz turned out to be not the player that they hoped he would be, and they end up, he gets hurt, and they have to go to Nick Foles, and Foles gets red hot, they win a Super Bowl, and then they drop him because Wentz is their guy, and then Wentz does it. I thought that when he went to Jacksonville and the way he was working with Trevor Lawrence, I thought that was going to work. And I thought Trevor Lawrence was a really good player.
Well, I think so, too. And I think, Mully, he still can be.
Yeah.
He has been now a starter. This is his fourth season.
Yes.
He started pretty much every game. He missed one game last year, but he started 17 games, 17 games, 16 games in this year, every game. I don't think he's lived up to expectations for being the number one overall pick.
Totally agree with that. But that was a draft class where no one has lived up to expectations.
But I think he still can, if that makes any sense.
I
don't know. You asked a question that is so damning for any professional athlete.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but I did off the air ask that.
Well, I don't want to make you uncomfortable, but you asked Dave Wanstead. I'll just share it with the class.
Don't make me uncomfortable, but just share what I asked
you're
Dave
gonna bring it up.
Privately after we had an interview with him.
When you asked Dave if Trevor Lawrence loved the game, does he love the game? That, to me, is something that's out there about him, right? You're not the only one wondering that people are wondering that privately or publicly around Trevor Lawrence, and I think that it's a really damning question about any athlete, especially a quarterback.
It's different to ask if Nate Davis loves the game than to ask if Trevor Lawrence loves the game.
Because
he's a first overall pick.
Yes.
He is the quarterback of the team. He is one of the essential leaders of a team, is the quarterback, period, end of story. And if you get a sense that a guy, it's something that he does because he's real good at it, and he's always been good at it, so he does it. But, you answer the question for me. How do you teach someone to love the game?
It's impossible to.
Does losing the game make them love the game? If you benched a guy, does he then love the game? They never would bench him because he's better than everyone.
Failure, adversity, falling short of expectations, that can create, if not a love for the game, an impetus to do better. And I think that's what you're looking for with Trevor Lawrence. You wonder, even though he was a first overall pick and he comes into the league, they struggled that first season, 3-14, I believe. But then he made the playoffs.
Yes.
And there was a lot of conversation. And I think I was one of those people, too, thought that he had arrived. Yeah. He was a Pro Bowl quarterback. He was the number one pick in his second year. He took the Jaguars to the playoffs. They won because of him. And I think that you wonder if he exhaled after that. Human nature, you wonder if some things happened last season that, you know, were just kind of ordinary. He's way too ordinary too often for a number one overall
pick. He's too good a player. Yes. He has too much talent to be that ordinary. And again, I agree with you. That is about as damning a thing as you can say. The worst insult in all of football would be that a guy doesn't like contact. Would be, you know, I mean, he's a good running back, but he doesn't want to get hit. That is like accusing someone of, like, well, he's too big a coward to be a good football player. That's, to me, the most damning comment you can make. But right up there is, that guy just doesn't care.
Because of the leadership.
Because of the
job description.
Well, for a quarterback.
For a quarterback especially.
But that's a very damning comment to make on Nate Davis. And the very fact, and I just want to bring him into it for this reason, because we saw the Bears lose a player in the game, and they replaced him with another backup. And Bill Murray played pretty well, and they didn't go to Nate Davis. And Olin pointed that out. When you heard Flusi call him out from the podium, He doesn't do that with players. He doesn't talk about how guys need to play better and all that stuff. He doesn't go up there. That to him was like this is it.
Well, because
this is the final move before you say is the guy doesn't care or the guy can't play is to say, hey, does he want to play? We need to know. I mean,
because what happens is internally, they see the things that we're noticing outside the building. They see those things every day in practice or in meetings or the disinterest or the lackadaisical attitude. So they may say, okay, position coach.
Yes, they take address him aside.
Or maybe Matt Eberflus says to him privately in a meeting, they say, hey, what's going on here? And then when those things don't work, then I think a lot of coaches have maybe a quicker process, but Matt Eberflus, I think, has been pretty patient. So when he did go public, you got the sense that, well, nothing else has worked. Let's try this. And it doesn't seem to have worked either.
That's a really damning thing to do.
It is.
Because that's not a coach that criticizes guys. That's not a guy who calls out people from the podium.
You can replace your right guard much more easily than you can your quarterback.
Yeah.
If you're concerned with the commitment level of that player.
And Doug Peterson has never called him out. I just want to clarify.
He has
that.
Not.
Yeah.
Nor would they probably agree publicly with the charge right. or assertion right. that he doesn't care about the game or doesn't love the game or passionate the way that some players are. Quarterbacks are supposed to make everyone around them better. The way you do that is beginning with an infectious energy or enthusiasm or an easy confidence. And I think that Trevor Lawrence has the confidence, but you wonder if he has the charisma that a lot of leaders have.
It's a legitimate question. And I just asked Dave what he's heard about that because it's out there and, and we've heard rumors of that and he did not really want to discuss that.
Well, The Jaguars must have explored that or felt comfortable enough with that in the offseason to give him the kind of contract they signed him to.
But you also take a guy number one overall and he has the talent and you made the playoffs once, you're going to stay with that guy for a long time.
You are, because as disappointing as this season is, I think they probably still believe in Trevor Lawrence over the long haul in Jacksonville.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm really bothered by the fact that Dave didn't like the game. I just needed him to say, oh yeah, the Bears are going to win this one, and I'd have felt better, right?
Right. Well,
doesn't it give you a little bit of pause?
Because
it's a bad spot. I agree.
I think I have a lot of pause anyway, but it's because of the conditions and the elements and the unusual nature of this game in London.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's as much of a gimme as we may make it out to be by Friday at 10:30 or 10 o'clock, whatever time we're off the air.
Yeah, we have plenty of time to wait and make our picks when it counts.
We
right?
do, yeah.
We're not like, you know, we don't have to pick by Wednesday a la Dan Weiderer. We can take our time.
Don't rush weeds.
All right, we got a lot to get to. We're going to talk to Mike Florio next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mm-hmm. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get beat,
beat!
We get beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat! What's
up?
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to Mike Florio, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Check him out. Good morning, Michael. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Doing well.
We are living the dream, and I think we're really – there's so many good stories to talk about in the league. You know, again, the Chiefs win without the quarterback throwing a touchdown, but they're 5-0 going into their bye week. I'm curious, Rashee Rice has a surgery today. The interesting information is that they know he needs the LCL repaired, but it might not be as serious. The thinking is that he will be out for the year, but there's a possibility that it wasn't as bad, and maybe he won't be. What will they learn today?
Well, I assume they'll figure out exactly what's going on. I thought exploratory surgery went the way of 8-track tape players and cigarette machines. Like, I hadn't heard that term forever, and somebody said to me that they still do have exploratory surgery. It's called MRI. So the cynical part of me, and I was always a little bit this way from practicing law, but I've gotten this way from covering the NFL. Rashee Rice has an off-field issue that he was hoping to resolve after the season. The goal was to get through the season, have a huge year, establish himself as a number one receiver. He's got 8 felony counts pending from a street racing incident. The video is shocking. They're lucky nobody got killed. And the idea was get it resolved, take the suspension after the season. Now that he's going to be out for the rest of the year, they're trying to find a way to land this plane. And I think part of it is, you know, if he's out for the year and everybody knows he's definitely out for the year, if he serves a suspension, some people are going to say, this is a little too convenient. So I feel like they're deliberately keeping the door cracked open. So if he does work this out so he serves his suspension this year, it won't feel like he absolutely definitely would have missed all those games. That I've been suspicious of this from day one, that they understand it just looks too contrived, but it's also very strategic and smart to try to arrange it. So if you're going to be suspended, you may as well be suspended for games you weren't going to play anyway.
Mike, over in Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin has a decision to make, or does he? What do you think they do in terms of Justin Fields or Russell Wilson?
I'm a firm believer that in lieu of obsessing over decisions that are at some point down the road in anything that you have to do, take heart in the reality that by the time you get there, the answer will reveal itself. And I've been saying that about the Steelers for weeks now. There will be a moment where you know the obvious course. And if Russell Wilson's healthy, the team has lost 2 in a row. The offense struggled on Sunday night in prime time. Justin Fields didn't look as good as he had the first 3 games. They need a spark. QB1's healthy. Bring QB1 back. He's already had his new slogan worked out. It's not going to be let's forge. I thought it was going to be Steeler Nation, let's forge. It's going to be win the 7th, which I don't like, but I haven't liked any of his things. Go Hawks was fine. Let's ride. Win the 7th. But the fact that he's got it ready to go tells me we're getting closer and closer. And why not? Why not shake things up? The offense didn't look good. And you're not really benching Justin Fields. You're just putting the starting quarterback back under center now that he's healthy.
Mike, I've got 2 wide receiver questions related to the Green Bay Packers. The first, obviously, what in the heck's going on with Romeo Dobbs? And the second is a former Packer receiver. What happens with Davante Adams? Does he have to get healthy before he's traded, or can they trade him? What about those 2 situations?
Well, the Dobbs situation, by all appearances, was a 1-week blip, and they're going to get it straightened out. And, you know, one of the things we've become sensitive to in recent years is the mental health of professional athletes. They're under a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. There's a lot of things that can happen. And when a player just walks out, it's possible that he's being insubordinate. It's possible there's other issues going on. I just hope that everyone involved takes into account the possibility that this wasn't just a guy who decided to break the rules, given the choice between breaking the rules or complying with the rules. And I hope the Packers are appropriately sensitive to that as we move forward, and anyone else who might pass judgment on Romeo Doubs. As to Devontae Adams, on one hand, the Raiders want to get a deal done now. On the other hand, they want a second-round pick. How are you going to get a second-round pick for Devontae Adams? Unless somebody is desperate or somebody can be tricked into giving up a second-rounder, like the Jets. You know, every time I hear the Jets and the Saints as the suitors, I wonder, are the Saints really suitors, or is this just being something that's used to get the Jets to overpay, like they did with Le'Veon Bell? If you remember back in 2019, and I remember this very well because I was doing reporting on it, all the Ravens are going to pay Le'Veon Bell. The Ravens weren't even interested in Le'Veon Bell, but they managed to make the Jets think the Ravens were, so the Jets overpaid. So, hey, the Saints are going to get Devontae Adams. Maybe the Jets will be the team that gives up a second-round pick. I just think it's going to be very hard to get a second-round pick unless you attach your own fourth-rounder, so it's like a face-saving two. Hey, we got a second-rounder. Yeah, you had to go fourth-rounder with Devontae Adams to get it, or they pay almost all of his money for this year with only the minimum transferring to the new team. That's the only way they're going to have a chance to get a second-round pick. And at some point, if they want to get this done, if they want to stop paying him $938,000 per week, they got to trade him.
Caleb Williams took a step last week, Mike, against the Panthers, against a bad Panthers team. How big of a step do you think it was?
That's the key, bad Panthers team. We don't know, and we won't know until we see whether or not this continues. He's 3-0 at home, quietly 3-2. For as bad as it looked early, the Bears are above 500, along with everyone else in their division. So, I mean, it's encouraging, and now Jaguars, a fairly desperate Jaguars team in London, see what they can do, see if they can keep it moving. But it's, you know, it's one of those things where Jaden Daniels has attracted all the buzz early on, and that takes some of the pressure off Caleb Williams, some of the scrutiny, some of the attention. He can just go about his business, and he is. So it's two wins in a row, admittedly against teams that aren't that great. They have one win between them, or one win each, excuse me, the Rams and the Panthers. But still, winning in the NFL is not easy. And it's good to see Caleb Williams and the Bears kind of settling down that early season mess that they were in.
Mike, we'll let you go. The Bears have another one-win team coming up Sunday morning. I'm just curious, when you look at that particular game, is it weird to you that the Bears left last night and that the Jacksonville Jaguars are not scheduled to leave until Thursday night? Now, they got two games there, but isn't that a little bit of a different approach?
Well, yeah, and we'll see that. Some teams go early and get fully acclimated. The Jaguars, when they get to that second game, I think it was last year, Travis Etienne, their running back, explained to me how they felt so much fresher after being there for a week, and it makes sense. So, you know, the Vikings went over late in the week last week. I can't remember when the Jets went. Teams do it differently. You know, teams like to have their routine at home for as long as they can. Bottom line, if you keep the bodies, you know, on the right clock and you're sensitive to the jet lag and rest and whatnot, you can pull off a quick turnaround. But yeah, we'll see. It'll be another data point in this broader question of when's the right time to go. And my guess is that the results have been all over the place. Otherwise, we'd know by now what's the right way to do it because the data would back it up. Hey, you're, you know, 87% more likely to win if you go Tuesday than if you go Thursday. I don't think there's any trend or everyone would be doing whatever the trend is that points to success.
It's a great point. Thanks, Mike. Always a joy.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
It's an excellent point that he makes there.
The trial and error.
Yeah.
And there's no rhyme or reason, and there's no method that has been widely accepted as being the right one.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.